This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Behind Enemy Lines. I'm your host, Alejandro Zuniga, here from the Michigan Insider, Michigan.247sports.com. The Michigan football team takes its show on the road for the first time this season as they head to Lincoln, Nebraska to face the Cornhuskers at Memorial Stadium. And we're going to talk about it, get Nebraska's perspective on welcoming in the number two team in the country as they themselves are a rebuilding program using the Wolverines as their blueprint. Then we're going to turn our attention to Michigan State and Ohio State, two programs going in different directions this season, talking where the Spartans go from here after another blowout loss, and then catching up with all the news that surrounded Ohio State, both from South Bend and in the postgame comments from Ryan Day that followed. It's a fun episode, so let's dive right in. Welcoming to the show, Brian Christopherson, who covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers over at 24/7 for Husker 24/7. Brian, had a chance to talk to Matt Rhule during Big Ten Media Days. He's coming into a program that requires quite a bit of a rebuild, right? And Nebraska started the season 2-2, losses at Minnesota and at Colorado, but then come back and beat Northern Illinois and Louisiana Tech to get to 2-2. What's the vibe of the Nebraska program as it's year one of what's presumably going to be a multi-year rebuild process?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing Rhule has stressed, and I think most of the fan base is in step with him, is that you can't skip steps in this process of building this. And I think Michigan fans, to a degree, can appreciate that when they go back to the start of Harbaugh when he came to Ann Arbor. Michigan was much further along at that point, I feel like, than Nebraska is right now. But I remember those first couple of years with Harbaugh, specific games where you felt like he's instilling a mindset in the trenches with this team that is for the big picture, and it's not just about this specific Saturday necessarily. Obviously, you want to win, but I do see some of that with Rhule. And like I say, it might take a longer time, and it might be a tougher build than Harbaugh's had. But he said he doesn't want year two to feel like year one. So that's the biggest deal here, is to just keep making steps throughout this season where ideally they make a bowl game. That's a weird drought that Nebraska's had since 2016, which is amazing to say out loud, but it's true. And that's sort of the goal, I think, for the fan base, is for them to get to six wins or something like that and play in the postseason and then build from that foundation. But the biggest thing for Rhule is just week by week getting his team better. And so that next year we're not sitting here saying, they're in the same spot they were, you know, last September. You feel like they've actually covered some ground in that time period.
Well, speaking of not being in the same spot as you were the year before, I was reading up on your guys' coverage over on Husker 24/7, because I know one of the big questions for this week is who's going to be the quarterback for Nebraska, right? And it seems like from the highlights I've seen from the film, I guess not real film, but the highlight packages I've seen, and from your guys' coverage, it looks like it could be, you know, one of three guys, maybe three guys playing, right? There was Jeff Sims, who was a Georgia Tech transfer, started the season, got injured against Colorado. It looked like that was an ankle sprain. Turnovers were a big issue for him. There's a younger guy, Harburg, who's running option and triple option football. Very classic stuff at Nebraska, and has helped lead that team to a couple wins. But then saw Chuba Purdy come in for the end of the game last weekend. That's a guy Michigan fans are familiar with because he played a good chunk of that game last year in Ann Arbor. So I know you don't have the answer of who's going to be starting at quarterback on Saturday. I know part of that's going to be, you know, who's healthy, who's playing best in practice throughout the week. But specifically the first two, Heinrich Harburg, Jeff Sims, what do they bring if they're the ones who get the snaps on Saturday?
Well, there's a lot of Harburg momentum within the fan base right now. It's a tough topic to nail down because Harburg has done his job pretty well for a young QB the last 2 weeks. He's also played against competition in Northern Illinois and Louisiana Tech that wasn't as good as Jeff Sims was playing against in two games where he really struggled against Minnesota and Colorado on the road. That was a really hostile environment in Boulder. I know Colorado's an incomplete team in some ways, but they were fired up, and it was a tough setting. And Nebraska just struggled with the snap count and various stuff like that. The bottom line is Jeff Sims turned it over 7 times in the first two games. I mean, it's hard to live with that. Harburg has not turned the ball over really. He's gotten away with some things against lesser competition, so it makes you wonder how that will translate against a team like Michigan. Harburg is a very good runner. And we'll see if the injury is something where it knocks that back a little bit. But as you said, he's been running the option. Louisiana Tech just flat let him have the lane on the option. They took away the pitch man, but they decided not to tackle Harburg usually. And so he was running for, he had 3 runs of over 30 yards, has really good speed for a 6'4", 6'5" type guy. So he's a Nebraska native, and right now is a good story, but I think Rhule knows that there's some areas, especially in the passing game, where he has to come a long ways. The big question with Sims is, I feel like he's still, on Saturday, I was watching him move around, still struggling a little bit with the lower leg injury. So I don't know if he will even be all the way back yet this week. And then the hard part is his last game, was against Colorado, and he didn't play well the first two games. So he's basically has two really bad experiences as Nebraska's quarterback. He's been out for a couple weeks, and now, oh yeah, you're going to go start against Michigan. It's kind of a tough situation for him if he gets the call. He was supposed to be the QB1 without question, sort of going into this season. But right now, I would say it's very much up in the air about who's where. And Chuba Purdy would probably be the third guy in line. So if you see him, that tells you Nebraska's got the injury stuff is real this week.
Yeah, to kind of put a bow on Harburg against Louisiana Tech last week, passing wise, he went 8 for 17 for 107 yards and a touchdown. But as you mentioned, when he hits a hole, he's probably a dual threat runner to the level that Michigan hasn't quite seen. Although Gavin Wimsett from Rutgers had a couple nice runs last weekend. He had 19 carries for 157 yards and a touchdown, a long of 72, and yeah, you could just see him pull away when he hit the hole with the speed of a top athlete, but the throwing mechanics of someone who's going to maybe need another year or two until he's up to the level that his ceiling certainly portends to. But outside of the quarterback position, who are some names to know along the rest of the offense? I know in reading some of your coverage, including from the press conferences earlier this week, the offensive line has really struggled in pass protection. I know the left tackle, like that position, is a bit of a bugaboo for the Nebraska offense right now. So what's going on there? And then who are some names Michigan should know along the offense for Nebraska?
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem for Nebraska is beyond the QB spot, their top two running backs going into the season are out for the year. Gabe Irvin and Ramir Johnson were supposed to be those guys. Not only were they the top two guys probably carrying it, but they were the guys I think most trusted in pass pro and that sort of, the parts of the game where you don't have the football in your hands. Anthony Grant is the man at running back now. There's no doubt about it. He had a good game Saturday, and he's been around the block. I mean, he was a starter last year and almost had 1,000 yards. He had 600 yards in the first 5 games last season, so he just jumped onto the scene. And then in the Big Ten, he really kind of struggled. He was maybe going a little too much east-west. In this league, you've got to have that running back who knows when a 4-yard play is a good play sort of thing and doesn't turn it into a no gain or 1-yard loss. He had too much of that last year. So this will be a good test for him to see how much he's grown in that. If he can get those like extra yard or two in a game like this against a great defense, he's a guy obviously to know. He is capable of you know, making someone miss and taking it to the house. So he's dangerous. Billy Kemp is another to keep track of. He has a high volume resume from Virginia. He's a senior, transferred this offseason. He's not going to take the top off of defense. He's one of those like 5'7" receivers who is just tough to cover in the middle of your defense. And if he catches a ball on the run, he could make a big play. I would think they'd go to him a lot. Marcus Washington's another veteran receiver. Other than that, they're pretty low on depth at proven receivers. They're with proven receivers right now. Thomas Fedoni's the guy to know at tight end. He was a 4-star recruit.
Former Michigan target right there.
Yeah, he was top tight end in that class, and he suffered two serious injuries his first 2 years, so he basically didn't play any college football. And he's made big plays the last few weeks. He's gotten in end zone 3 games in a row. He hasn't been targeted a ton, or he wasn't this past Saturday, but he is a guy who I think needs to have a solid game for Nebraska to have a shot in this one. You mentioned the line. Nebraska's got great rushing stats. They're like 6th in the country. So on paper, it looks really good. And some of that option stuff has created explosive plays. I do think there's still people in this fan base wondering, like, how good are they when they go against Big Ten defenses and have to line up and just churn out 4 yards, you know, those sort of 10, 11 play drives you have to have sometimes. That's going to be the big question and test they're going to have this week. And as you say, at tackle, I think Nebraska, especially left tackle, has been suspect this year. So can they hold up with a young, you know, with a young QB possibly dealing with that Michigan pass rush?
Talking to Brian Christopherson, senior writer for Husker 24/7. Brian, you just mentioned it, and that's something that really stood out to me is statistically, Nebraska currently leads the Big Ten in rushing offense, also leads the Big Ten in stopping the run. They're giving up just 1.8 yards per carry. It's better than Michigan at this point in the season. Pretty close, number one, number two. Also leads the Big Ten in sacks. So when Michigan has the ball, what's Nebraska doing defensively that's been successful in stopping the run? Who are the guys that, you know, that Michigan fans should keep their eyes on? And then, you know, looking at the stats again, not quite as successful in stopping aerial attacks. So what are some of the issues there?
Yeah, first off, if you ask me between Nebraska's run defense, which is ranked first in the country, and some, it depends which stats you look at, some of them second, but they're right up there at the top in the country on run defense. They're only giving up 46 yards per game. Now, have they played great running offenses so far? No, they did do a nice job on Minnesota. They made Minnesota basically go away from the run in that game. I think that is more real than Nebraska's rush offense, actually. Like, to me, it feels like that there's more substance to the run defense. And the reason I say that is because Nebraska's got a nose named Nash Hutmacher. He's playing at a very high level, and he's a force to deal with on the interior there. So if he has a solid game on Saturday, it opens up a lot of tackle opportunities and plays behind the line of scrimmage for other guys. It's a good defense. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do this week. This is going to be their toughest test, but even against Colorado, if you watch that game, they lost 36-14. The defense was rolling in the first half. Like they were shutting Shadur Sanders had like 60 yards passing, you know, going into the half or something like that. And then it was one of those deals where you keep turning the ball over. And eventually the dam kind of breaks and the big play happens. And the game got a little sideways on them. But most people around here are really optimistic about what Tony White, he's a defensive coordinator, is doing. He's got a 3-3-5 scheme that is a little maybe unusual to what some teams present. And it's a very bendable defense. Like it's a 3-3-5 in label, but it can do it. They can really mess with the down linemen that they play on a given snap and sort of like a lot of movement before each, you know, each snap that I think causes some problems for some QBs. So I think that's the most interesting game within the game this Saturday is because I know they have a lot of respect for Michigan's like balanced offense, and I think Michigan's averaging 10.2 per pass attempt or something like that, if I read the stat right. I mean, so it's going to be a better balance that they're dealing with than they've seen from any opponent so far. But it's also a confident Husker defense. So if they could get a takeaway or two, that's the side of the ball which can keep Nebraska afloat in this game and maybe make it interesting. But we'll see.
Brian, to your point, you saying that reminded me that I came away from that Nebraska Colorado game feeling really bad for the Nebraska defense, because you're right. They put together a very good effort through the first half, maybe first three quarters, and it just felt like the Cornhuskers offense just kept putting them in bad situations and kept turning the ball over. And finally, hey, as you said it, the dam broke. We'll see how this all plays out on Saturday, and I know it's very early in the week to be making predictions or anything of that nature. But at this point, Michigan will enter Lincoln as 19-point favorites. It's going to be the first road game of the season for the Wolverines, who have played, three, non-Power Five, non-conference opponents at home, and then, dominated Rutgers to the tune of a 31-7 win. Brian, with that sort of a spread, I'm not going to ask you to maybe make a pick in the game, but as you're watching this game on Saturday, what are some of the keys to the game? What are some of the things you think could swing the game one way or the other?
Well, you could simply start with Nebraska went minus six the first 2 weeks in turnovers. And every week, Captain Obvious person can come on here and say, hey, don't turn the ball over as much as the other team, obviously. But in Nebraska's case, to have a shot in this one, they really have to avoid like a multiple turnover game. I'm not saying you can't have one where you give it away or someone makes a great play or something like that, but if they go beyond that, I just don't give them much of a chance. Nebraska's defense, as good as it has been in a lot of aspects, has not created a lot of takeaways. They have four so far this year, but even that number is a little bit of a fib because a couple of them happened really late in the game, sort of when it didn't matter. And so they have talked about that a lot. To win a game like this, you need to turn over Michigan two or three times and have it be one of those deals where maybe you get that pick six or something that you're not expecting that gets the stadium jumping, and it puts a little pressure on a team playing its first road game, as confident as Michigan is, and as much as they trust who they are. You got to put a little stress on them early by making that kind of play, I think. So I think the spread is probably fair. I've kind of seen it as like a 17-point type of gap, maybe, if everything just holds equal. The only thing about games like these are both teams are kind of old school in that they will wait, they will bring the play clock way down, and Nebraska's like that too. And if this is a game where each team only has 60 to 65 snaps or something, I always worry for the favorite a little bit in those type of games, because it's one of those deals where, like, if the team that's supposed to win has that turnover I'm talking about, or that really calamity play, it shortens the game considerably suddenly. And then you're sitting there in the third quarter, it's like a 3-point game or something, and then who knows if somebody steps up and makes a play. So that's going to be the key for Nebraska. They've kind of finished games, except for Colorado, strong. Like, they were outplaying Minnesota dramatically in the second half until a fumble in the last 4 or 5 minutes there. But they need a good start. Rhule talks all the time about being a body blows team that wins the fourth quarter. But in this type of game, you can't have Michigan running out, 10-0 on you 8 minutes into the game. I feel like Nebraska's maybe got to get on the board first and kind of get that stadium rolling. I know this is your first time coming to Lincoln, and the reason a lot of Michigan players who have played there probably talk highly about it is that was a great game in Lincoln a couple of years ago. I mean, that was a night game, and Nebraska came to the fight that night. They It was a battle, and everybody remembers Adrian Martinez, I think, had the fumble on the play where he's going to get the first down and all that stuff. But Nebraska did some things. They made explosive plays when they were there to be made, and this team hasn't been able to do that yet. So Nebraska is going to have to maybe get that long pass play or something that we just haven't seen yet that sort of pops up and you're like, oh, I didn't expect that. And suddenly it's a game. But I think 17 is about right as far as a spread.
Well, we will see how it plays out on Saturday afternoon in Lincoln, Nebraska. That's a 2:30 p.m. Central kickoff, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Very excited to go to Lincoln. First time seeing a football game there. Heard only great things. Most of the Michigan football team that we've talked to this week has raved about that atmosphere. So I'm pumped for it. And I hope, listeners, I hope you are too. So thank you, Brian, for taking us behind enemy lines. Stick around, and we are going to turn our attention to Michigan State and Ohio State. We'll be right back.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And we are back, folks, on the Michigan Insider, michigan.247sports.com. Alejandro Zuniga taking you behind enemy lines and turning our attention to the Michigan football team's rivals, starting with Michigan State, which fell to Maryland last Saturday to fall to 2-2 on the season. It was a game that, you know, statistically maybe looked better, certainly looked better than they did the week before against Washington. But the Spartans had five turnovers, including a couple of backbreaking interceptions and a fumble that turned the game from Nathan Carter. I've got Stephen Brooks from Spartan Tailgate to talk about the Spartans. Stephen, you were at the game. You've been following this program as it's undergone a very tumultuous season so far. I think there were probably some positives to take from, you know, a Michigan State team that actually outgained Maryland. But of course, five turnovers, still uncertainty at the quarterback position. What were your takeaways from the Maryland game?
Yeah, I agree with most of those things as well. I guess first and foremost, it was that the kids haven't quit. You know, because, I mean, that was the question coming in was like, look, I mean, Washington put a number on them, obviously, as folks know. So after that, this was game four, of course, you know, so now you start to sort of wonder and watch, you know, do guys suddenly disappear or not? And then they're 0-2 under Harlan Barnett. So it was just like, you know, what's that? Is that spirit going to be there? Is that fight going to be there? And I thought it was, you know, and I thought it was all the way throughout the game. As you know, they start 21 down. They drove it right to the 1 yard line, you know, after the second touchdown by Maryland, I believe it was, or whatever, first quarter, they drive it down there. And then they made a bad decision, in my opinion, and ran a weird, stretch run play to the outside and didn't get it there. So then they fell down 21. But anyway, yeah. So I thought they fought, as you said, you know, maybe there's some questions at quarterback, I think, now moving forward, just because it's the second straight game that Noah Kim has not been very effective, was picked off several times. So, you know, that was sort of his his lane, in terms of when he won the job. It was a lot like Peyton Thorne. It was like he was the safe guy. He's the guy you can trust. He's the risk-averse guy. And, he hasn't really been that since they've started playing Power Five teams. But, yeah, on the other hand, Kate Hauser and true freshman Sam Levitt played. I don't think either of them, like, immediately really, like, wowed you, certainly. But, I mean, it was one drive apiece. So I think we've seen enough from Kim to say, like, there should probably be more looked at those other guys. And then there's some decent things defensively, too, I thought, as well, when you're talking about, big picture takeaways from this game.
It does sound like Noah Kim is going to be the starter, at least for this weekend. Obviously, a lot of attention is always going to be on the quarterback, but this was a sort of game that really swung quickly. You mentioned that that Michigan State fell into a 21-0 hole. I mean, Noah Kim starts a quarterback. He throws, really a particularly bad interception on that first series where he has a clean pocket. He's kind of thrown off his back foot, and it just goes right to a Maryland defender. He does, he again starts moving the ball in the next possession. He can keep the ball on reads. He leads that drive to the 1 yard line. As you mentioned, it got stuffed on fourth down. Maryland turns around, drives 95 yards on 11 plays, and all of a sudden it's 14-0. Then Nathan Carter, who's really, he's been the bell cow for Michigan State, right? He's been active both as a running back. He carried it 19 times last week. Also gets active in the pass game a bit, but he fumbles. And Maryland cashes in, makes it 21-0. And yeah, I mean, I think you're right to say that Michigan State fought back. They made it a bit more of a game in the second half. Certainly, Noah Kim's receivers didn't do him any favors. You had a couple drops, at least one at the end of the first half that could have gone for a touchdown. But now Michigan State turns its attention to Iowa and Kinnick Stadium at night, and two programs that have had disappointing starts to the 2023 season for sure. At this point, are you just looking for a team that's going to keep fighting? Are you really keying in on, hey, let's see if there's kids who are going to maybe be redshirting and, retrying next year somewhere else? Or are you looking for specifics from Michigan State as it, takes the show on the road at night at Kinnick?
Yeah, I don't want to put any too sort of, stringent of like expectations on them. Like, I still game to game just sort of don't know what to get from, what to expect from these guys, just because it's such a fragile, delicate situation, So Harlan Barnett after the Maryland game, just sort of unprompted, because we've been asking him quite a bit, hey, has anybody approached you about sitting out, and shutting things down? And unprompted after the Maryland game, he claimed that he addressed the locker room and said, like, hey, if you don't want to be a part of this, if you think this is not for you anymore, no hard feelings, we'll all still care about you or whatever, but raise your hand now. And he said nobody raised their hand. And so I mean, that's a good sign, of course. That I said, I thought the body language on the field was good. Some of the effort I thought was there for the most part. So yeah, I just want to see, I think you want to see him go to Iowa and compete, show that fight, show that energy, that spirit, if it's still there. Cause when it's gone, we'll know. Like that'll be pretty obvious. And there's an Iowa team that has obviously struggled to score points, as most folks realize. They're just coming down sort of an embarrassing game out in Penn State, so they're gonna be back at home and motivated. From what I understand, I mean, it could be a little bit of a slap fight, I guess, just because of some of their weaknesses. I mean, their QB play hasn't been there with Cade, really. O-line, I know, is not in great shape. So maybe, they can't score a lot of points. Michigan State's offense is in disarray a little bit. Maybe there's a quarterback rotation going on. It could be a little bit of one of those. But I will say too, I mean, I think most reasonable, warm-hearted folks will agree. Like, Michigan State's, they're due for something good to happen, right? Like, I would think at this point, just the coin has to flip their way one of these days, and maybe they go out and put a great Saturday together out there this week, and people can feel good about that. But it does feel like this team's sort of due for something good to happen for a change.
Well, they'll take that, hopefully good fortune, hopefully for the Spartans, some good fortune, to Kinnick, at night on Saturday. Spartans follow that with a bye week, and then they are at Rutgers, before hosting the big showdown, the big rivalry showdown against Michigan later in October. Stephen Brooks, you can follow him and all of the Michigan State content, including some coaching intel, coaching opinions, and of course, whatever's going to happen with the Spartans as a team this year over at Spartan Tailgate, part of our 24/7 sports network. Steven is on Twitter or X at Steven @M_Brooks. That's Stephen with a PH. Stephen, thank you so much as always for joining. Safe travels to Iowa. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely, man. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
And we will close our show as we always do with the Ohio State Buckeyes, who had one of the games of the year, and certainly through the early portion of the season, in going to South Bend and beating Notre Dame 17-14 on a walk-off touchdown, or as close as you can get it, from Chip Traynham. Ohio State is 4-0, and we have Patrick Murphy on the show. Patrick covers the Buckeyes for Bucknuts of 24/7 Sports. And Patrick, before we dive too much into the Notre Dame game, I'm wondering if you can do me a favor and count to 11.
Yeah, that appears to be part of the problem with that play you just mentioned. Actually, the final two plays defensively for Notre Dame.
I was going to say, I could take a timeout. We could take a timeout and come back and then see if you can count to 11.
Right. I didn't even realize this during the game. We were, you know, down on the field at that point, as you know, and I'm not counting players. That's not my job. So didn't realize it until we got to the post-game press conference room and one of the writers for another outlet looked at me and said, "Do they only have 10 guys on the field for the final play?" And I was like, "I don't know." And he showed me something on Twitter and I was like, "Well, that's not ideal for Notre Dame." And then I saw Marcus Freeman's comments afterwards about, "Well, we didn't want to get a penalty." And then, as somebody quickly pointed out also on Twitter, "Well, it would have been like 6 inches. Maybe it would have been worth it because the area of the field that 11th player would have been in probably would have at least helped try and stop the running back get into the end zone." But, you know, it's not like Marcus Freeman has coached defense for a while or anything.
Yikes. Well, tell you what, when it comes to narratives and when it comes to college football, that Notre Dame Ohio State game pretty much was everything that you could possibly ask for, outside of maybe having Taylor Swift in one of like the luxury boxes or something like that. It was an awesome game. It was one of those games that for me is what makes college football special, right? It's two historic programs. It's a packed crowd. It's an awesome crowd. It was a great, you know, TV production all around. And then a game that lived up to it, right? It was a game where it felt like every single play mattered, and literally down to the last second. That's what it took for Ohio State to pull out the victory just moments or minutes, you know, after they'd been stuffed on a fourth down. It seemed like the narrative could swing the entire other way. And then you have the post-game press conference from Ryan Day and the post-game comments heard around the college football world, where he calls out our good friend Lou Holtz and talks about the toughness that he thinks that his Ohio State team and the program has. Patrick, that's something that we have talked about throughout the season, that toughness and winning in the trenches and competition has been the theme, the mantra for Ohio State. I guess from your perspective, did they prove that against 10 men twice against Notre Dame? But more seriously, you know, they went on the road, they won a low scoring game. They did so running it for the yard that they needed against the defense that they were presented against. What were your takeaways from Ryan Day's post-game press conference and from the game itself?
Yeah, so for me, the post-game rant, so to speak, from Coach Day, I think it was more like the first opportunity he's had to really kind of address what's clearly been bothering him, I imagine, more than just this past week. You know, obviously, maybe you could have done it after beating Notre Dame last year, but I think there was plenty of other things to talk about. And then, you know, you lose to Michigan. You can't claim to be tough after that. You lose to Georgia by 1 point, but you still lost even in a good showing. So there's not really a good opportunity there. I think this has just been bugging him for a while. Now, I don't think that the narrative is completely incorrect. As you pointed out, look, going on the road and beating a top 10 team, you have to be tough to do that. And I do think Notre Dame, last year's Notre Dame proved not to be as good as the ranking showed. I do think this is a pretty good Notre Dame. We'll see what the rest of the season, you know, presents for them. They should certainly make sure they have the right amount of players on the field more often than not. But it's interesting to call out the people calling you out for being that tough when on a crucial fourth down, you try and end around to your receiver as opposed to just running up the middle. Like that would prove toughness, right? Like, I mean, there's various definitions of toughness. If you can get the 1 yard, you know, you're physically tough in the trenches, and that's what we've talked about. You also should be able to pressure Sam Hartman more than one time in the game, which was a big issue for Ohio State. But again, they still went and got a top 10 win on the road in a, as you mentioned, a tough environment. So like, I think depending on how you define toughness, I think Ryan Day has a point. But I also think that what Lou Holtz said isn't necessarily undone by what Ohio State did. I think they still have some of those same issues that have kind of haunted this program in some of the big games the last couple of years. And that's those are still things that need to be figured out. The offensive line played better. It wasn't great. You know, if you take away, I did the math after the game. If you took away the long, I think it was a 61-yard run from Travion Henderson. Ohio State averaged 2.5 yards per carry, which I know that's not all on the offensive line, but that's certainly a major factor. Kyle McCord had good time, but was pressured some. I do give the offensive line credit on that final drive. I think McCord was sacked once, but more often than not, he did have time. So that was good to see. But again, the defensive line just it's going to be a theme until they prove that they can get into the backfield. You know, no sacks in the game. I think JT Tuimoloau was credited with a tackle for a loss on Sam Hartman on that final Notre Dame offensive possession. You know, just in a game like that, it's actually fairly impressive that Ohio State could go on the road, not pressure the quarterback very much, and still come out with a win somehow. I do think the defense was more willing to be kind of bend, don't break. Like, you can take the underneath stuff all day. We're not going to let you score. And it worked for the most part. Notre Dame doesn't score until late in the third quarter. So, you know, kind of putting it all together, it worked. But, you know, is it sustainable in games going forward? Penn State, Michigan, on the road at Wisconsin, those type of games? I don't know.
Yeah, this was a special game for me because this was the first Ohio State game I've seen all year where I've been able to sit down and actually watch it all the way through live as it happened. Glad that the schedule gods worked out between Michigan, Rutgers, and Ohio State, Notre Dame to make that happen. So it meant that I could have a lot of thoughts on the Buckeyes as the game progressed. And I think you just hit on a lot of those points. What really stood out to me is that I felt like the offensive line did a pretty good job of protecting Kyle McCord, as you said, especially late, especially when it mattered. I thought Notre Dame, you know, they ended up only rushing three or four guys at a time where maybe they could have gotten a bit more pressure on them later in the game. I thought he did a good job of spreading the ball around. Marvin Harrison Jr., I mean, even when he's on one ankle, you can tell the type of impact he has on games, the way that defenses have to adjust to prepare for him. And probably a good thing for Ohio State at this point that you're turning and heading into a bye week so that Marvin Harrison Jr. has a bit of time to rest up. What looked like it could be a pretty devastating ankle injury, and thankfully for him and thankfully for Ohio State, he was able to return to the game and looks like it was more a scare, but you know, ankle injuries, as many injuries do, they do linger. But yeah, Ohio State did enough. Now has a bye week and gets to spend that bye week knowing that it has one of the most impressive wins of the college football season so far under its belt. Patrick, as you're looking ahead, Ohio State has the bye week, then it's hosting Maryland at Purdue, and then one of the games of the Big Ten season, one of those games that's going to define the Big Ten East, which is hosting Penn State on October 21st. What are the areas, you know, you mentioned that Ohio State did enough, but not necessarily proved that they could go in and win the Big Ten this year. Maybe not quite playing up to the level that they need to by the end of the year. And the team, as most teams do, should improve throughout the year. What are the areas that you still think are question marks?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about a couple of them. The offensive line, in terms of especially the run blocking, needs to get better. They need to figure out ways to have bigger games for these running backs, especially if, you know, not that Kyle McCord played poorly, but just kind of offensively in general, it was kind of sluggish. for this game. I mean, 366 yards against Notre Dame is not bad, but you know, you rely on one big touchdown run at the start of the second half, and then obviously a touchdown at the end. Kyle McCord doesn't throw a touchdown, which in a Ryan Day offense doesn't happen very often. With the quarterback, that's now the second time this year Kyle McCord hasn't thrown a touchdown a game. Now, the other one was his first real start against Indiana. Defensively, look, I think this team may be different than Ohio State teams we've seen in the past, where we could see more of these closer, especially as some of those games you mentioned, these closer wins where the defense just has to kind of put the team on its back and keep Ohio State in the game. You know, I thought the secondary played really well. They had trouble defending the tight end a little bit. It was 7 receptions for 75 yards for Mitchell Evans, who, you know, just kind of terrorized over the middle. So that's something that they will need to work on with certain teams coming down the schedule. But for the most part, other than the pass rush, I thought the defense played really well. You know, Estime, who was came into the game as one of the best rushers in the country, only 70 yards, though they did give up 57 yards to Jeremiah Love, who had I thought was the more impressive of the two runners. So, you know, things certainly to clean up. I do agree with you. I think the bye week comes at a good time, not only for the Marvin Harrison injury. He did have like this big ice pack taped on his ankle after the game, and we saw him walk out, but not in a boot or anything like that, which is probably a positive. But you go into this week clearly having felt almost the loss. You know, if you're standing on the sideline, you're on the field as those seconds are ticking down. So you know, okay, we got out of there with a win, but we have X, Y, and Z where we need to improve. But you're doing it from 4-0, right? Instead of 3-1, where everything feels awful. And, you know, they can approach it either two ways. Either you get these things fixed and kind of look at it as, you know, we barely got out of there. We got out of there by the skin of our teeth, or they don't fix these things and you're going to have problems down the road. You know, I think if you turn on the film, it's clear what needs to be done, but sometimes you do need a loss. I think back to Ohio State's 2014 team a lot, where you lose to Virginia Tech in the second game of the year, and it forced Ohio State to make some changes. And as you said, they got better throughout the year. But I would think that this close win, excuse me, would you know, force them to really dive into some of the things that aren't going the way that they hoped.
You know, as coaches across the country will tell you, best to enter improvement week, your bye week, coming off a win and having tape to look at and improve after a win, rather than having that same amount of improvement to make after a close loss. Patrick, thank you so much for your time. If you want to follow his content and read up on Ohio State, as it enters its bye week and then the meat of the Big Ten schedule for them, he is over at Bucknuts over on 24/7 Sports, and you can follow him on Twitter slash X at underscore Pat underscore Murphy. Patrick, we'll take the next week off on this show because of the bye week. If you check out any local elementary schools, check and see if Notre Dame is there learning how to count. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
And that will do it for this week's episode of Behind Enemy Lines. For myself, for everyone over at 24/7 in the Michigan Insider, thank you so much for listening. I always express my excitement on this show about the upcoming week because we get just a few football games a year and they go by very quickly. And then I spend the rest of the year, as I'm sure you do, looking forward to football season again. But this one's special because it's going on the road to a place I've never been before and a place that's been on my bucket list, at least in terms of trying to knock off all the Big Ten stadiums before that gets significantly harder. So I'm pumped for it. Thank you so much for listening to this show. If you are interested in a ton more preview content and a lot more intel about the Michigan football team, about the basketball team as it begins practice, we're going to be doing hockey coverage because that's starting very soon. And of course, always recruiting. Recruiting is always happening. You can find that over at michigan.247sports.com or themichiganinsider.com. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you at Memorial Stadium.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.